Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing, and now the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they can't be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this awakening, is 877-300-7645. The Islamic State released a video yesterday purporting to show, and Reuters at least got that right, purporting to show the beheading of a second American hostage, journalist Stephen Sutloff. The video is like the first one. It doesn't actually show a beheading. It is wholly and completely unlike every Islamic jihadist group beheading that I have ever seen. It only has in common the one of James Foley. And it is highly unlikely that Muslims have changed their lust for blood, and that they have turned over a more merciful aspect of their persona and are now content just to have a condemnation and confession without showing the victim suffering. I think that is unlikely to the extent it would be a billion to one. So we have yet another fraud. That is not to say that Stephen Sutloff is alive, not to say that James Foley is alive, but it is to say for certain that they were not beheaded as part of the videos released by the Islamic State. And the U.S. government knows that to be the case. But it is interesting how the United States and the Islamic State are dancing together, cooperating with one another, both getting what they want. The United States wants another war. It wants to be able to use its military. Why spend $1 trillion a year between spying and the military, Veterans Administration? Why spend that $1 trillion a year if you don't use it? Why would a president whose popularity has plummeted not want to take advantage of being a wartime commander-in-chief and to have his popularity rise as a result? And so both sides, the Islamic State, getting what they want, which is to be at the center of world attention. It is to show that they have risen to the point that they are now the principal enemy of the United States. That's what they want. They want the United States to come after them because it will enormously improve their finances, improve their armaments, improve their popularity, and swell their ranks. Because Muslims universally hate America. And the United States gets what it wants. To be able to go play military once again. It's what the United States does more than any other country in the history of the world. In the 400 years since European colonists began to settle North America, there have been 101 wars. This, the Syrian War, will be the 102nd. That's one war every 4 years. It is what we do. It is what we have become known best for doing. And so they're playing into each other's hands, giving each other exactly what they want. President Barack Hussein Obamanation has vowed that the U.S. will not be intimidated. Of course not. No, he wants to attack. After the Islamic State militants released a video showing the beheading of American journalist Stephen Sutloff. Now, the difference here is that with the Washington Post, they were not honest. The video did not show the beheading of Stephen Sutloff. Mr. Obama warned, our reach is long and our justice will be served. We have no justice. Have none. We are not a place of justice anymore. Haven't been for a very long time. But our reach is long. That's why Yahweh speaks so negatively about America through his prophet, Yeshayah, Isaiah. And that's all that America wants to do. That's all Obama wants to do. Engage in another war. Another U.S. journalist, James Foley, was killed similarly last month. Separately, the U.K. held a meeting of its emergency Cobra Committee. Oh, my God, it's Cobra Committee. After threats to kill a British hostage were shown in the latest video. Oh, my God. Now the world is really on edge. They have failed. U.S. National Security Council spokesman Kathleen Hayden said that U.S. intelligence agents had analyzed the recent released video showing U.S. citizen Stephen Sotloff and had reached the judgment that it is authentic. Yeah, it's the same group of morons that said the James Foley video was authentic when it is filled with so many sleights of hand that even those who are not skilled in video production recognize that it's a fraud. Speaking in Estonia, Mr. Obama said the beheading was a horrific act of violence, which we cannot even begin to imagine the agony everyone who loves Stephen is feeling right now. Our country grieves with them. No, it doesn't. No one knows him. No, his parents know him. But nobody else is grieving with him. And the mom, as we talked about, you know, I understand that she wants her son back. But to play into the hands of the Muslims by stating that they should act like their prophet Muhammad and protect the people of the book, it's just laughable. And, of course, they laughed right back at her. It's not what the Quran says. The Quran and Hadith make it clear that the people of the book were Muhammad's principal victims. That every opportunity Muhammad had to terrorize them, to murder them, to rob them, to enslave them, to decapitate them, he did. In fact, one of the most vivid stories recalled in the Quran and Hadith is the beheading of 900 men and boys in front of their mothers. In one afternoon in Medina, with their bodies and heads tossed into a trench in the middle of the marketplace as Muhammad watched. That's the truth. We need to come to the realization that Ebola, as bad as it is not the most deadly disease on the planet today. Islam is the cancer. Not radical Islam. Not extremist Islam. Not Islamists. Certainly not Al-Qaeda. Not even the Islamic State. Islam is the most deadly disease mankind has ever conceived. Speaking of Ebola, just back from a week in the Ebola hot zone, the Centers for Disease Control and, now it's prevention. They've added a P to the CDC, so I guess now it's the CDCP. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director, Dr. Tom Feynman, had a dire assessment of the situation on the ground. Yes, with the loss of one life, maybe two lives, America's going to go to war. And yet with the loss of thousands and soon to be tens of thousands, America yawns as it relates to Ebola. The bottom line is that despite tremendous efforts within varieties of countries, the number of cases continues to increase and is now increasing rapidly. That's what they call a pandemic. when the number of infected individuals not only increases, but when that increase becomes rapid. The virus is moving faster than anyone anticipated, he said. During his trip, Friedman visited the three countries hardest hit by the Ebola epidemic: Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. Now, there have been three others, most recently added, well, if not recently in the sense of Nigeria and Lagos, Nigeria, it has been infected for some time. But the Congo is now infected with a different strain of Ebola. In Liberia, Friedman donned the familiar yellow suits, the face masks, and the goggles that healthcare workers and observed how Ebola patients were being treated. There is a window of opportunity to tamp this down, he says. You know, what is it? We were going to tramp down. This is tamp down as opposed to tramp down. Wasn't that the response of the Secretary of State of the United States, as well as Senator John McClown, that we needed to tramp down the cancer that is the Islamic State? Well, they're making a similar connection here, to tramp this thing down. But that window is closing, and we need action now to scale up the response. It's what I've said about Islam for a long time. Unless the disease is quarantined, unless universally every nation rises up and says that we will not tolerate in our company what Islam represents, that we will not allow it to infect and kill our people and to cripple our society. It is the same result as we're witnessing with Ebola, where we're not taking sufficient action. The World Health Organization today said that the magnitude of the Ebola outbreak has been vastly underestimated. 3,000 people now have been infected. Over 1,500, almost 1,600 have died. This is a terrible tragedy, one that will grow tenfold or more over the next months. During the break, we talked with Scott about the fact that there's a religious zealot, a Christian evangelical, now living in the Minnesota area, who was infected with Ebola and was treated with ZMapp and is allegedly cured. But since we really have no history, long-term history, with the status of those who have survived Ebola, kind of an interesting place to put somebody in the land of mosquitoes, since it is a blood and fluid-borne disease. But the thing that is interesting is that, as I understand it, there have been four or five healthcare workers that thus far have been treated with ZMapp. One African, one Spanish priest, the two American evangelists, I think one other. Of those, either two or three have died, and two or three have survived the disease, suggesting that the cure rate of the disease with or without the treatment is somewhat consistent. There have been 3,000 people infected, a little over 1,500 have died. Now, that suggests a 50% mortality rate. But we do not know of the 1,500 who have been affected and have not died, what number of those are still infected, and what number of those who were infected and have overcome the disease. You know, the human body has resources to fight really all alien viruses, and so long as a person is extraordinarily strong, in terms of their health, there's lots of times where even terrible diseases can be overcome. You know, if you look at the deaths by flu, It typically takes the lives of those who are very young, very old, and those who are already have a compromised immune system. And that's just the nature of how the body works. So we don't really know whether or not ZMapp is a long-term solution, because the numbers thus far are unproven. I can tell you, though, that the company in San Diego, which has an affiliate in Canada, has now expanded the testing in monkeys and has found that monkeys that have been infected with the disease for a matter of days as opposed to hours still overcome the disease with proper ZMapp treatments. Speaking of the other disease, the more viral one, the one that is far more infectious, the one that is far more deadly, Nigeria's Islamist group, Boko Haram, has seized a northeastern town, this one, Bama, after fierce fighting with government forces. They overcame the government forces in a straight-up military operation. Thousands of civilians, of course, have fled the town because any cute girl over the age of 6 will be hauled away in sexual jihad to be raped. The military has not yet officially commented on the claim that it has lost control of Bama, the biggest town in the Borno state. Last month, Boko Haram said that it had established an Islamic state in the areas it controls in northeastern Nigeria, and also indicated that their Islamic state was in unison, united with the Islamic state in Syria and Iraq. The capture of Bama would be an extremely significant development that would raise concerns that Boko Haram's next target will be the state capital, which is about 45 miles away. It would be the biggest town under Boko Haram control. These militants have gained the ability to outgun Nigeria, which is Africa's most populous nation's military. Now, you might say, how is it possible that a podunk and hairy Islamic militant group in the, you know, hinterlands of Nigeria, the furthest northeastern part of that country, therefore in Central Africa, could possibly gain the kind of weaponry that would enable them to prevail in a straight-up military battle against Africa's largest military? Now, the answer is really pretty straightforward, but it's extraordinarily condemning if you're an American. And that is because America decided between John McClown and the Obama nation to arm the Libyan jihadists to overthrow the Gaddafi government, and that country now is so awash in weapons that it has armed Mujahideen throughout the region and throughout the Middle East. Fighters from the Islamic group in Afghanistan that's aligned with the Taliban, it's a group that has been active as a Mujahideen group throughout the region for a considerable amount of time, announced that they are going to ally themselves with the Islamic State. So the Islamic State, and now one of the larger divisions of the Taliban, have agreed, along with Boko Haram, that they're all one true Islamic caliphate, that they are working together as one. Now, if more Islamic terrorist groups do this, we find the Taliban, we find al-Nusra essentially joining into the Islamic State, we find the awakening Sunni warlords joining with the Islamic State in Iraq. We're finding that the now aspects of the Taliban are aligning themselves with the Islamic State. if Islamic terrorists worldwide continue this trend and all acknowledge that they are collectively part of this Islamic caliphate, then what we have is the precursor to the Magog War, to the unified Islamic assault on Israel. And we are seeing this take place before our very eyes. The news conference comes amid an ongoing row in Afghan's presidential poll. The June election, of course, has no winner, only losers, demonstrating that something in the range of a third to half of the votes were fraudulent. The statement says that the leadership of the Taliban has agreed to form an alliance with the Islamic State. We ally with them, they said. They are great mujahideen. We pray for them. We will operate with them. We will join them. Speaking of the Taliban, Pakistan's military, which is the source of the Taliban. The Taliban was conceived by Pakistani's military intelligence, the ISI, to gain control and influence in Afghanistan because of the benefit of Pakistan controlling a pipeline through Afghanistan, through Pakistan, from the Caspian Sea, thereby being able to tax the flow of natural gas from the Caspian Sea reserves through a free water port from Pakistan. That's how the Taliban was created. But the Taliban was created by Pakistan, as were all of Pakistan's Islamist organizations, to terrorize neighbors, either Afghanistan or India, or to operate in Kashmir. They were not conceived to overthrow the Pakistani army. They were used to terrorize others on behalf of the Pakistani army. Well, with Pakistan having so much internal political upheaval, the Taliban now has become a problem for Pakistan. It's exactly as you would have expected. When America invaded Afghanistan and pushed the Taliban out of Afghanistan, although they have returned and control almost everything except the city-state of Kandahar, the fact is that they regrouped and rearmed along the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan. And there they have become a formidable fighting force. So yesterday, fighters from the Pakistani military said that Pakistan's military, which is funded almost entirely by the United States, armed by the United States, killed over 900 suspected Taliban members in the North Waristan area. Some 82 soldiers died fighting the insurgents and the raids across the country. Now, when you hear 82 soldiers dying, killing 910 Taliban, you know that what you're dealing with here is propaganda, not truth. In most cases, the Taliban, which are better armed than Pakistan's military and are vastly better devoted than Pakistan's military and are fighting for their God, unlike Pakistan's military, would claim more soldiers than soldiers would kill jihadists. And at a greater than 10-to-1 ratio in favor of the soldiers, essentially impossible. So what we have here is propaganda that is being disseminated for the express purpose of encouraging the United States to continue to arm the Pakistani military. But nonetheless, another place in the world where the nation's military won funded and armed by the United States, is being used internally to attack and kill its own people, just like it is in the Ukraine today. The Islam is deadly. It is corrosive, but it is not the only deadly and corrosive religion in the world. We continue to see horrendous examples of grotesque immorality coming out of India. This story reads the semi-naked body of a teenage girl who was allegedly humiliated by village elders. When you read village elders, you should read religious leaders for protesting against her father's harassment. Has been found near a railway track in eastern India. Police suspect the 15-year-old girl was raped and then murdered. Her family said that she was made to spit on the ground and lick it up in an act of a grave form of humiliation. Official courts in India's villages often sanction punishment of residents deemed to have violated. This says local, read religious codes. You see, in the Hindu religion, like the Islamic religion, women have no rights. They're property. They are sold by their parents to the highest bidder. Property, viewed as property by their parents to be sold by them. And then when they are sold, they are owned by the purchaser. Now, it's all prettied up by calling it a marriage dowry. But the woman is nothing more than property. And if she rebels against that and says, you know, I have my own life to live. I do not want to be under your disgusting rules. Then the way that the Hindus in India react is that they strip the girl naked. Then they humiliate her in public. Then they publicly rape her. And then they kill her. It's disgusting. There's a reason that we find God hating all religion. The Islamic religion and the Hindu religion. But, you know, even in the Christian religion, Paul wrote that women are subject to their husbands. That husbands lord over their wives. It's the same miserable state. Women have universally been harassed by man's religious schemes. You know, if it wasn't for Muhammad's proclamation that women's bodies were the property of Muslim men, and then Muslim men could have up to four wives, with the fourth slot being a rotating slot, which means as many as you want. And that men could divorce them at will, could kill them at will, could starve them if they wish, could beat them if they wish. And that women existed solely for the sexual pleasure of men. Islam never would have survived. It was the great reward for being a Mohammedan jihadist was that when you terrorized a community, the victors, the jihadists, got to rape the women, got to take the women as sex slaves. It is the nature of religion. It is why God despises them. Moving on to our next story in the news today, the American Armed Forces, according to this journalist reporting on President Barack Obama's plan to launch an air assault against the Islamic State, says that they face a formidable challenge, including intelligence gaps on potential targets, concerns about Syria's air defenses, and fears that the militants may have anti-aircraft weapons. Now, here's our problem. The enemy is Islam, and yet we do not want to identify the source of their rage, the source of their action, of their brutality. It's right out of the pages of the Quran, and yet we're universally denying that reality. So we can't define the enemy. Second, we have no intelligence on fundamentalist Islamic groups. They do not use communication methods that are under the purview of the NSA. In other words, all of the NSA's billions of dollars worth of spying mechanism is wholly and completely worthless when it comes to Islamic terrorist organizations. So we don't know who their operatives are, who their leaders are. We don't know where their leaders are. We couldn't distinguish a jihadist that's part of the Islamic State from any other individual in Syria or Iraq. They don't wear uniforms. They're indistinguishable. We're blind. These military analysts speaking to Reuters have said that America has formidable challenges regarding the Islamic State. Now, they did not mention the fact that the biggest challenge is that we're unwilling to acknowledge their motivation. We're unwilling to consider their playbook. Their motivation is to please Allah, the Islamic God. And their playbook is the Quran and Hadith, Muhammad's example. And since they are unwilling to consider those things, they have no way of understanding what they have done or what they will do. That's the biggest gap of all. The second is that we are blind relative to potential targets. We can't distinguish who is a leader and who's not, and we don't know where the leaders are. And since it is a religious organization, we don't understand that killing the leaders means nothing to the organization. Al-Baghdadi, who is a religious cleric, is the leader of the Islamic State. If he were killed tomorrow, the Islamic State wouldn't miss a beat. They would go on. It would have no influence on them. Now, it talks about concerns about serious air defenses. Well, we should be concerned because the United States is too arrogant to notify Syria when we're going to attack. And Syria has very formidable air defense capability. Now, most of it is around Damascus, which is the last place America is going to bomb. But nonetheless, it exists. Third, fears that the militants may have anti-aircraft weapons shouldn't be a fear. We know they do. We provided all manner of weapons to the Shiites and the Shiite government of Iraq. And they have been confiscated, those weapons have been confiscated, billions of dollars of them, by the Islamic State. Moreover, the reason that Syria is not using its air force in the fight against the Islamic State is because the United States, via Qatar, provided anti-aircraft weapons to the Mujahideen in Syria. They have successfully brought down scores of Syrian aircraft, fighters and bombers alike. And in fact, it's one of those things that was really funny is that Senator John McClown was being interviewed on Fox, arrogant as he always is about how we should be arming the moderate Syrians as if there were such a thing that were in the rebellion, and that they're forced to fight only with AK-47s against a military that was bombing them with anti-aircraft with aircraft. And long-range artillery and the like, and rockets. And the video was actually showing the Mujahideen celebrating the downing of a Syrian aircraft using anti-aircraft weapons that had been provided indirectly by the United States through Qatar. proving that everything that, of course, Senator John McClown was saying was a complete fabrication. But we know for a fact that they have them because they have brought down scores of aircraft. And all we're doing is putting Americans in harm's way to make a bad situation worse. Every American that died in the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq died in vain. They died making a bad situation worse, empowering the Islamic State. There was no Islamic State prior to the invasion of Iraq. The invasion is what created them. So all of the American deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan were counterproductive, suicidal. And we know now the weapons that they have. So that is the situation that we face there. The Pentagon began preparing options for an assault on the Islamic State fighters. That's really great. Yeah, all of our war thinkers that haven't a clue how to fight a religious war. They can't even consider the religious option. They have bungled every war that they have engaged in. They bungled Korea. They bungled Vietnam. They bungled Afghanistan. They bungled Iraq. They bungled Libya. And now, only an insane person would think that doing the same thing is going to generate a different and better result in Syria. We ought to eliminate the Pentagon, not empower them. They have proven that they are counterproductive. Let's not follow them again.